69, which I know were roller coaster years for you. After your back problems in 68, were you worried about whether you were going to be able to stay in the majors and come back from that?
Well, 68, let's see, I had the back trouble for a long time. I had it from 64 on, so it wasn't anything new, but in 68 they finally operated on me. I had a ruptured disc and they took it out, and I didn't play all year. And I went down to the instruction league as a player coach. At that time we had Boa and Money and Vukovic and Lozinski and Joe List and all the kids that were coming up to be future Philadelphia ball players. So I went down as a coach, instructor, and I worked out, you know, to see if I could, you know, get things going again. And I went down there and I felt pretty good. You know, I wasn't allowed to play or anything because they were, you know, wanted to make sure everything was going to be all right. But I took ground balls and I threw batting practice and hit ground balls and I did all those things. And then the following spring, Skinner was the manager. And I came to spring training and, you know, they were going to go with the kids. They were going to go with Boa and Money and all those kids. So I was in the expansion draft. I wasn't drafted, but I went for Larry Jackson in as a replacement because he quit. And it was probably one of the better things that happened to me. Not that you were traded or anything, but it gave me an opportunity to play 3.5 more years, which I probably wouldn't have done if I wouldn't have gotten, you know, traded.
Did they consult with you about going to Montreal, or did they just tap you on the shoulder?
Actually, it was the night before opening day. The season had started. Cincinnati had played their game already, and we were in Chicago. We had a workout day, and then we were playing the next day. And that night, Skinner called me up to his room and told me that I had been, you know, given to Montreal as a replacement for Larry Jackson. And I met the team here in New York. The first game the Expos played when we beat New York, I don't know what, some 14, fantastic score.
14,
yeah,
12,
yeah, it was a real wild one. And that's how I became an Expo.
I think that might be a unique way to change teams. I don't know if anybody
else has
been awarded as compensation.
I actually wasn't traded. I was just kind of given to him. Here, you know, take him. But I had been with Gene Mock for a number of years in Philadelphia and in the minor leagues and everything else. And he knew what I could do, I guess, and he knew what he needed for his club. And, you know, they gave him a list of players, and I guess I was one of the guys that, you know, he picked. So I got up there, and it was a great experience. You know, it was a out-of-the-country team, and it was new, and it was crazy because, you know, the language naturally is always a problem, you know, unless you speak French. But, you know, finding places to live and the money exchange and all kinds of things, it was really a complicated thing, you know, the first year or so. But people really tried to help up there. They loved the Expos. I mean, they were just crazy about them. They just couldn't get enough. It didn't matter what the score was. It didn't matter who won or lost. They were just so crazy about seeing the Expos play. This is in Jerry Park. And they were just sold out every day. I mean, it was pouring rain, like worse than tonight. You couldn't even see the field. People would be sitting in the stands and just waiting. And said, "Well, why don't they go home? You know, and call the game and let's get out of here." The people, they had 30,000 people. Most of them stayed there until they finally played. And sometimes we play at 9, 10 o'clock at night. I mean, they couldn't call them because people wouldn't leave.
Mac Jones captured them in his first two at bats.
Well, his first half of the season was unbelievable. I mean, he hit more home runs in left field when they started calling Jonesville. And he was just unbelievable how he just took over that area and just, you know, he just named Jonesville after him, and it was outstanding.
You really had to wait for Maury Wills to leave before you got your job.
Well, what Mark told me, this is how he thought was going to happen. He said they were going to start the season with Wills at short, Coco LaBoy at third. He said, "I don't know how Coco LaBoy is going to do because he was a triple A or double A player." And he said, "If he falls down, then I'm going to put Wills at third and you'll play short." And I said, "Fine, I'll wait. You know, I get nowhere to go." Well, it turns out that Coco LaBoy wound up being one of our better players, RBI guy and a home run guy. And Maury struggled. You know, the feel was bad. It's, you know, it was soft, and you know, there was a lot of, and the cold weather and all kinds of stuff. So Maury struggled a little bit early in the season, and then we made that deal about a little bit around the mid-season with LA and Chicago and us in Montreal. We traded Wills and Mota to the Dodgers. We got Fairley and Popovich, and then we traded Popovich to Chicago for Adolfo Phillips. So it was a roundabout deal and everything, but it, you know, it worked out fine. You know, it was, so I got, that's how I wound up playing.
What do you remember about the holdout and boycott of spring training in 69?
Well, I remember, you know, I was one of the older players, and, you know, I had been in the player association for a number of years, and, you know, no one liked any part of that. Nobody, you know, nobody cared about doing any of that. But, you know, as a unit, you stuck together, and, you know, we stuck together like everyone else. I remember leaving the ballpark after I talked to Mock. I left the ballpark, and Gil Hodges and Lou Walker and Pignatano and Eddie Yost were playing golf. And when I got home, the radio came on the radio that he had a heart attack and died. So he had a heart attack in that spell somewhere. So I remember that about
69.
Oh, well, yeah, we were, well, that's right, we were down there in 72 too. All right, well, 69, when the strike hit, they just said, you know, go wherever you want. So I went home, but I took Clyde Mayshore, who was then an outfielder with us. He had his family there, and he was from California. And I said, "Well, if you're welcome to stay with us if you want, you know, and you know, anybody, I offered it to anybody I wanted. We'll just go to Philly, and when the thing settles, we'll just drive up to, you know, up to Montreal." Well, anyway, he came to our house, and he stayed with us. We drove up in his car. We must have had about 9 people in his car, my wife and all his kids and my kids and everything else. And we drove, and we got there, and we stayed for a while, and then, you know, it settled, and, you know, we started playing again. But it was kind of a strange deal, and then we all had to get back up to Montreal and start playing again.
I understand you bought a house in Philly in 68.
In 60, yeah, I bought Tommy Lasorda's house.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I had rented it for a number of years, and then when my kids started going to school, I said, well, we got to make a decision. You know, we got to, you know, we either stay here or we go somewhere else, but he's starting school and everything else. So he said, he was scouting in L.A., and he said, I'm not coming back, and, you know, that's it. I'm going to stay out here, so if you want the house, you got first shot. I said, okay, we'll take it. So we bought the house, and, you know, we've done things to it and all that stuff, but, you know, it's basically where, you know, Tommy built. He didn't grow up there, but he grew up in Norristown, and all his brothers and sisters and all that, those people live there. So, you know,
that make it tougher to go to Montreal?
Well, yeah, you know, that's the old kiss of death, they say. You know, buy a house, and, you know, next year you get traded. Yeah, you know, everybody stayed home, and I went up there, and then they joined me, you know, as soon as school was over, and that makes it tough. You know, it's tough for everybody. But fortunately for me, I played most of my years in Philly, and we lived there, and, you know, worked out fine. So.
And then you went back.
Then I went back.
About 10 years.
When I left there, they told me, when you leave, we want you back. So, you know, if you get released, or you quit, or you don't want to play anymore, you know, you come back. So when I got released, I called them up, and they said, yeah, come on back. So the next day I was a coach.
That's good. Would you consider Mock your mentor in baseball?
Yeah, he taught me a lot of baseball. He taught me how to play and, you know, strategies of the game and the rules and regulations. You know, he was always on top of all that stuff. You know, he just never let anything get out of hand. You know, he was always on top of the rules, regulations, and how to do things, and how, you know, stuff like that. And everybody started catching on about, well, we better be sharper, you know, because we don't want to get left out in the cold here.
Really, except for the last half of 68, he was your only manager in the majors?
Yeah, he was my manager the whole time, except for, you know, when he quit and Skinner took over for that period of time.
Yeah,
but
those were strange times. I'm going to interview Dick Allen when I get back to the West Coast.
Are you
going to
find him?
He's in LA. I talked with him before I started this trip, and we just couldn't find a time to get together. But I sympathize with his reasons for making the stance he did. Did it affect? Did it bother his teammates?
Well, not really. We knew. You know, that we called him Richie then. You know, what he did and stuff. But when the game started, you wanted him on your team, you know. He didn't like the rules and regulations of the front office, you know. He just didn't like it. He got caught in a trap, something about deal with his contract and stuff, and then he just got all upset. He wouldn't even deal with the general manager at the time, and he used to go right to the owner, and then they figure out things.
So, send his fines.
So it was a tough situation for management to have, Richie do what he did, and it was tough for the manager to knowing that he's going to play, but still,
you guys just wanted him in the lineup.
He could play. I mean, he was a good player. There's no doubt about it. So he just, you know, you did what you had to do. And, you know, he used to talk to me a lot and ask me questions about playing different things and whether he should do this or whether he should do that, things like that. But, you know, he was his own man. He was going to do what he wanted to do.
I saw him in Scranton the other night. I went to Reggie Jackson's benefit show down in Scranton. He looked like he was having a great time.
Oh, yeah. He's a great guy. He's a great person. But he didn't have any rules and regulations. He wanted to do what he wanted to do, and that was it. That was all.
I know you got it now.
I think that's about it, Bobby. I think that's about it.
Okay.
I appreciate it.
All right, good.
Thank you very much.
Didn't come out yet?
That was it.
Jesus.